Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. My name is Doug Cunnington, and in today's episode, I'm going to talk about project management skills that might be helpful for just living life. This sort of came together for me in the last 6 months or so, 8 months. Man, time flies. Basically, I have been doing some work, which I'll avoid going into many of the details related to my HOA. Everyone, they fucking hate HOAs. It's always a huge mess. And then you end up with retired people that have a lot of time and they're often spending it on the HOA, and I'm a retired person myself, or at least for the purposes of this discussion. However, I really protect my time, and basically, I'll cut through a lot of the things that happen with the HOA and the work that I have been doing unpaid. I say work in that it took time and it was slightly stressful, but basically, there were some prairie dogs, these cute little prairie dogs. In fact, the shirt that I'm wearing, there's a big prairie dog on the back. This shirt is from the Sturgis Brewing Company, which I visited in the last couple of days. So anyway, there was a move to exterminate a bunch of prairie dogs, about 80 of them. And I was like, that's not cool. And anyway, fast forward, skip a bunch of months, many meetings, a lot of hours, a lot of stress. Many of these prairie dogs, like almost all of them, except for like three, were relocated to Pueblo, Colorado, where there's essentially a preserve where the black-footed ferret, there's a preserve for the black-footed ferret, and it's a very endangered species. And the thing that black-footed ferrets eat are prairie dogs. So there's enough prairie dogs, so it's not like a feeding situation where they like throw them into a cage or anything like that. But anyway, there's prairie dogs down there. They live in the grasslands of Colorado in a more natural setting. And there's some predators out there. Keeps their numbers down. Anyway, it became apparent that I was uniquely in a position to help facilitate this activity, because it put me right in the middle of the two feuding factions of the neighborhood. So it worked out as well as I could have hoped. There's some other bullshit with the HOA and all that. But what it brought to my attention, I was like, oh yeah, I actually developed really useful skills as a project manager. Even though a project manager is kind of one of those bullshit job criteria where essentially you're kind of in the middle, you're not actually doing the work, you're doing administrative things related to the actual work being done. And it sounds very wasteful. And I remember in engineering school, an aunt of mine was a project manager, and she explained it. And I was like, so you don't do any real work? And of course, that was not a kind thing to say, but I was like a dumb engineering student. I was like, so you're not actually doing the coding. You're just talking to the other engineers and you're organizing. And I was like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Of course, later that became my thing. In 2008, I became a project management professional. And if you're unfamiliar, you have to have a lot of hours of experience working on a project / managing a project. And then you take a test. And it's a fairly difficult test. And there's a big book. And it's one of those gatekeeper situations where it's like, you have to, you know, document all these hours of experience. You have to take this, again, fairly difficult test. Funny thing is, multiple choice. So most people are like, ah, fuck, multiple choice. I'm really smart. I could do that. I'm sure you are really smart, but it's one of those where you have the, A, B, C, and then D is none of the above, and E is all of the above. and or like A and C, but not D. It's a fairly difficult test, even though it's multiple choice. So with that said, I got it in 2008, and you have to continue to renew it, like many professional certifications, every 3 years in this case, and you have to do continuing education, that kind of thing. In the past, I've like crammed in like the continuing education and other stuff, PDUs, professional development units. Many certifications have some flavor of, you know, you got to keep paying the main company, you got to take the fucking classes or whatever, and you know, give back to the community, blah blah blah. And there's ways to do it. I mean, it's not, I'm obviously doing it voluntarily, I don't have to do it, but it's such, or at least at the time, it was a lot of effort to do it, and I've kept it up. So every 3 years, I'm like making sure I am documenting all the stuff that I need to document as far as continuing education, creating material that helps others also counts. That's part of the giving back. So that's kind of the reason why I was like, oh, this episode can serve many purposes. One, it's helpful, hopefully entertaining. Two, it makes me, it helps me talk about myself, which is always a pro. And three, I could use this as a PDU. So when I document and say, hey, I created information for other people to learn about project management, that is a helpful thing. So this is, it's hitting three buckets at least. So that's why it all came together. There are other things in project management that can be helpful. I was running my business, right? So for just delivery, right? Like running a project is like starting something and finishing it. Very important to finish. A lot of people are good at starting things. They kind of suck at the follow through and finish. And by having, you know, the engineering background and then working at a consulting company and then getting this project management, you know, more education and certification and all that stuff, it's like, here's how you finish a project. So one of the big things that came into play was just putting together a schedule. And this, you may think, well, I'm not putting together a $1 million project. I'm just trying to go on vacation, or I'm just trying to plan a party or a family reunion, and I need to, you know, put together this schedule. And let's use the family reunion idea. So maybe you have a handful of different families coming in from all over the country. You need to think about how long it takes them to get there or travel. Are they going to drive? Are they going to fly? And then you have to think of like the venue. Let's say you're going to go to just a hotel that has like a couple banquet rooms or something like that that you could reserve, and they have food. So you hear the different pieces that go into it, and you have to think about the schedule of your family and the folks that are attending. So we think about the scheduling, and it's not just the scheduling of your family, but it's the scheduling of the hotel and the banquet room that you want to get, and maybe the catering or the restaurant that you want to bring in the food and that sort of thing. And then what activities are you going to have? Is it, you know, is it one of those hotels with like a water park inside and people can kind of do whatever they want? Is there going to be a show? We don't do family reunions, so I'm just making this up based on what I would assume people might do. Do you need to get a bunch of kegs lined up because you're a family that drinks a lot? Or maybe you want to have like classes set up because you want to like cook some food or whatever. So you want to have like a little cooking class or something like that. So there's all these different pieces you have to put together, and you have to understand when the stuff can be done. Plus, you have to understand the dependencies between some of these different activities. Again, this is just a fun trip, right? But let's say someone is showing up late. Let's say they were going to drive and they end up running into traffic and they end up having to stay overnight somewhere else. So does that impact some of the activities going on? Do you have to change things? Do they just write it off and they have to pay for it even though they didn't show up? What happens with those contingencies if something goes wrong? So I'm mixing a couple things because that turns out to be like a risk management activity. If you ignore the, you know, the life portion and the made up example that I gave here, you think about maybe if you're running a side hustle, you have a full-time job and you're like, okay, I only have X amount of time to work on this side hustle. And let's say it's, you're developing a piece of software. So maybe you have some developers working on it. Maybe you're working on it, but then you need to think through like the whole project life cycle. Like once the software is developed, how are you going to test it? Who's going to test it? And then you start thinking about like all these other dependencies, thinking about the schedule. And then if you have to pay the developer based on like the project or how much time they're putting in, do they have another project starting up at a certain time? So they actually need to finish by a certain time. So there's all these dependencies that you have to think about. And if you don't, you could find out you find yourself in a bad situation where you're running out of time and then your software developer contractor is like, hey, I have a whole other gig starting, or I only work 6 months a year and then it stops and then I don't do anything. So if we don't finish it by then that's on you. You have to figure it out. And that's the kind of thing where when you're working on a project as a project manager, maybe there are a bunch of opposing parties that are all working together, but maybe they're from different vendors and they're all working for one client. And maybe they're incentivized to not work well with each other, because if they do a good job, but the other vendor does a bad job, then is that a good thing for them? So you find groups that, you know, have no issue essentially being difficult to work with because they have other constraints and they have other priorities that completely differ from like the whole party, the whole group that should be working together. I put together some notes for this, but I see it's much longer than what I actually want to cover today. So this is not a comprehensive list. Maybe we'll come back to some other stuff. Plus, I do find myself just skipping around and layering on like five different things. Like I said, I started giving an example, realized I was getting into risk management, which is totally okay. But that's another thing that you consider when some of these things go wrong. A lot of it blends together. Now, before I keep hitting some of the meat and potatoes of this, I just got back from Portland, Oregon about, I don't know, I guess it's been over a week now. It's been a blur, because what happened is I got back and then I was good for about 24 hours. And then I got a fever. Like in the middle of the night, I started getting chills and I was like, ah, crap. It's been a few years since I got a cold after an event. Previously, it was like I would get back and almost like clockwork. I would have a cold, pick up a cough, huge pain in the butt. But it's been a few years. And part of it is hopefully getting some rest. I got a flu shot and that helped. I don't get a flu shot, but timing worked out, got the flu shots and I didn't get sick those years. So maybe there's something to it. We stayed, me and a few friends, stayed a little bit longer in Portland to drink some beer and have some food. And it was awesome. A lot of fun. I like Portland more now than I did before I went. And I've been a few times before, but some of the experiences were not as awesome. I mean, nothing horrible happened, but it was just like, you know what? It's not as clean around here as I would have expected. Or there's more people tweaking out on drugs on the sidewalk than I would have expected. There was a little bit of that, but the things that we were doing, the places we were going, it was a lot nicer than I expected. And I mean, we kept it pretty tight going, like, we're getting food here, we're going to these breweries, and it was awesome. Weather was perfect. The day that we were flying out is when it rained. So leading up to that point, it was like perfect weather, perfect fall weather, absolutely beautiful. And a little overcast in the mornings, which is cool with me. I don't want to get too much sun. And then on the last day when we were flying out, it was pouring. It was a pretty good rain for like several hours, which suited me just fine. So good trip overall. One thing I'm looking at, potentially not going to FinCon next year. So I had a great time. It's always fun catching up. But I was like, next year is going to be in Palm Springs, which is the desert. And it'll be in September. And I think it'll be hot. I think it'll be like 100 fucking degrees. And I'm not super interested in that. I was like, in the fall, in the early fall, like keep it up north, like Portland, great weather. I was like, Minneapolis would be pretty awesome. I went to a conference there like in 2012. It was a beer conference, a homebrewer conference. And that was super fun. And, you know, it's a little cooler up north. And I'm like, just keep it further up north. Or if you're going to do a conference in the desert, do it in the winter. Like no one wants to go to, I mean, you're indoors most of the time, but the desert traditionally, it's well known that it's warm there. So I'm like, less interested. The other part is like, and I don't have to go for as long as I did this last time because it was Tuesday through Sunday. Again, had a blast, but it's a long time to be away from home. And we enjoy the home. So, and I was like, you know what? It's a tad long. And I could always go shorter. So maybe I'll change the scope of it or something like that. But we'll see. The other part is I'm like, I don't go to too many of the talks. So it could be a thing where maybe number one, I could take a break. That could be fun. Just take a break. Then it'll be novel the next year. Or I could, instead of going from like Tuesday to Sunday, I'm just making it up. I can go like Thursday to Saturday and just keep it tight. Maybe not go to some of the talks, but just kind of be around, hang out with some people, and then get out of there. So we'll see. I'm still deciding. And then, well, it's future travel plans and all that stuff. And I have a year to figure it out. But I'm like, you know what? It could be good to take a break, especially with the desert aspect of the whole thing. All right, here's one of the big project management skills that I learned, and it's a hard lesson to learn. I still, like up until probably the last few years, I still resisted and kind of goofed up on this. This is estimating work or a schedule or the cost. Basically, you're usually very far off when you're estimating how hard something's going to be, how much it's going to cost, or how long it's going to take. And it could be rough, right? If you're in a corporate situation and you're thinking, all right, we have to plan for the schedule and for the teams to be a little bit behind. So sometimes like you get the estimate of how much work people think it will be. And then as a project manager, you add more time on there. Many projects or organizations have a specific amount of time that they're like, okay, if the estimate is this, add 25%. And then if magic happens and they actually deliver like they say, then things come ahead of schedule, which is very rare. Often what happens is like people will take up as much time as they said it was going to take, which is Parkinson's law. So anyway, what ended up happening, the useful thing for you and when you're thinking about like side hustles and working for yourself is however long you think it's going to take, it's going to be like 2 to 4 or 6 times longer when you're working on something yourself. Even like you're the one controlling the work and how much time you're putting into it and the effort and focus and all that stuff. We're just really bad at it. We think that we're smarter than we are. We think we can figure things out faster than other people because we're smarter than we are. Some of you are, maybe about half. Other half, you're not. We're not smarter. And in fact, you may be really disappointed to find out that you're average or worse, but a good half of you are average or worse. Again, a handful of you are better, but there's not as many as you think. So And if you're thinking I am better than the other people, that's highly suspect. So no offense, because I thought so myself when I started working online. I'm like, you know what? I should be able to do this a little bit faster. Turns out not. Turns out I'm just as slow as I thought other people were. The one caveat is if you happen to have skills related to the thing, you may be able to use those skills from some other thing. So I'll use a music example. So if you play the mandolin and then you're like, I'm going to pick up the guitar, you may be able to pick it up a little faster because you know how to play a fretted instrument. If you play the mandolin and then you're going to pick up the trombone, maybe not going to translate as well. So if there's something closely related, then you may be able to like skip some steps and go a little faster than you think, but usually not. Usually not. The other thing that not exactly related, slight rant perhaps, but when people are like, oh yeah, like I could definitely outwork everyone else. So like I'll be able to outwork everyone and put in more time and effort and focus and blah, blah, blah. Similar to thinking you're smarter than everyone else. There's a lot of people that could work harder than you. So I'm sure you're really good at working hard. That's a race to the bottom. And for younger folks, it may work out. But if you're roughly my age, say 40 or older, then you probably won't be able to outwork the younger folks. But if you're younger, you may be actually be able to outwork some people. But like I said, race to the bottom. You don't want to be a person who's like, I will outwork blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't know. Not for me. There was a time where I was like, you know what? I would be able to outwork people, but probably not. Not me, not anymore. So the other thing to think about when you're estimating work is triple constraint. You'll probably be familiar with this, even if you haven't heard triple constraint before. So it's thinking about how long something will take, how many resources it will take. And that could be, how many people, or if it's software, like how many CPUs or whatever, and how much it'll cost. So it's like time, resources, and cost. And the thing is, you could usually pick two, but you cannot have all three. Sometimes you could only have one of those. Like if cost is the most important aspect, it may take longer and it may take more resources. But it's one of those things where there's no free ride. So you get the triple constraint and you could have, two of the three, but you could never have all three together. If you happen to be Amazon, Tesla, Microsoft, OpenAI, some huge company, which you're not, unless you happen to be listening and you work there. Although unlikely, but basically, unless you have unlimited constraints, then you will run into the triple constraint. Moving on, one of the big things I opened up with talking about negotiation and being able to work with parties that oppose the overall goal. In my HOA, there were two parties and they are very much against each other. And I diplomatically put myself in the middle, not really on purpose, but I was like, I want to gather more information. I feel like I don't have all the information. So I was actually like fairly closely involved working with both groups. And at some point they reached a stalemate and I was like, is there any route? I went to the parties and I was like, is there any route where like this could be worked out? One of the groups was like, we need someone to lead this and we need someone to just complete the project, if you will. And I think you should do it. Then I was like, no, I don't want to do it. How about this other person instead? They seem like they might want to do it. They also did not want to do it. But what I did, I was like, well, I won't do it alone, but I would partner with a person that I suggested and that person agreed. So what I was able to do is take these in project management terminology, the stakeholders involved in this, and I talked to them and understood what was important to them. Not necessarily like why they were doing things, but I found out what was important to them and where the middle ground was. One of the issues that these stakeholders ran into is they reached a stalemate and they wouldn't even talk to each other. There was a lot of communication going on via email, via social media, horrible formats for parties that don't agree. So I did almost all communication in person, sometimes on the phone, but often in person so that I could actually like talk to people. Some of the communication towards the end, once things were moving forward, was via email. There's a lot of miscommunications that happen with email. Even if it's very clear, people tend to read tone in there, and it just kind of went off the fucking rails. So as much as possible, I was trying to talk to people in person to avoid any of those misunderstandings. But also, if there was like an opposing view, you could immediately talk about it instead of like a 30-minute delay via email or whatever, 30-hour delay, right? I'm not on email constantly replying back. So the big thing here is I was able to not alienate either of the groups to the point where like both groups at one point have asked me, hey, would you run for the board? The answer is fuck no, absolutely not. What I found working with the HOA over the last several months is it was like the opposite of like a daily meditation. So meditation should calm you down. People cite their heart rate going down. They're less stressed. They just feel better and it's life-changing. So this was opposite. Is it like if I did daily meditation, this was the exact opposite. So it was a little bit more stress, a little bit more just not being happy. So I appreciated the fact that I did place myself in the middle so that both groups thought Doug would be a good person on the HOA, which is a crazy, as much as they opposed each other, it's crazy that both of them would think I would be okay on there. And I did a good job. So like I will take credit. There's no way they would have asked me if I didn't do a good job. Shout out to my neighbor who also helped, but yeah, I think he's out too. Like he would be like, nah, I'm not gonna run for the HOA. So yeah, I found that being diplomatic and being able to negotiate and probably listen a little more than I talk and being very, very calculated with like the interactions that I was having. It did take a huge amount of time. And that is, you know, not only like time in the meetings and stuff like that, but like in preparation for the meetings, like a meeting to get ready for a meeting. And then like even just my wife and I talking about it took a huge amount of time. So completed the project and I'm done. I am not participating anymore. So I did what I was hoping to do. Okay. Couple other key points. So I'm not going to go super in depth on this one. Frankly, I don't think about it as often, but this is expected value. So very helpful to understand like cost and the cost of things like at the beginning of the project and then the cost or expected value by the end of the project and the potential ROI that you might get out of it. And this is an area, again, where you're thinking about typically money, but if you're thinking about life and how helpful these ideas could be, you can also think about time as a resource that potentially is more valuable than money, depending on the criteria that you're using. But also the convenience. So those kind of go hand in hand, but you can be thinking about, let's say you need to get to the airport? Is it better for you to take the bus that costs $15 and takes 3 hours, or $150 if you could take an Uber, but you get dropped off like right where you need to go? And instead of 3 hours, it takes 45 minutes. So you have to look at that and like, what is the expected value, the time value of your money? You have to think about the convenience factor of, you know, maybe you have to switch a bus and you have to go kind of far out of the way and it's going to take you 3 hours instead of 45 minutes. And then of course the cost. Now, that's just a made up example, but if you are thinking about being self-employed, working on your side hustle, then you might be looking at the expected value of hiring a VA to help you out editing videos and short form content, which I get 3 emails a day about. There's a lot of contractors out there trying to do that sort of thing. And that could be a great savings of time, right? And they might be able to do it for a relatively inexpensive amount. But then you also have to think like, am I actually getting an ROI out of this? Like, why am I even doing it? So there's a lot of things like that. But the overall idea here is expected value and thinking about things in terms of expected value. And don't forget, you can expand it out to other resources, not just money. So last one that we're going to go over, actually two more. So one very helpful thing is to look at your completed projects and do a postmortem and think about like what went well, what went poorly, and what would you do in the future. And because of this sort of feedback loop, you could improve on future projects. So I talked about, you know, me being kind of bad at estimating work or cost or, you know, just how many resources something is going to take. And it's hard to actually admit that it's going to take longer than you think. And over time, like as I was, doing similar work, I realized, oh, I usually think it's only going to take one day to, sign up for hosting, get a domain, add a new theme, you know, make sure WordPress is running and do a handful of things. And then I realized, oh, it actually takes longer than I think, right? So there's little things like that, super small example. But if, let's say you're going through the software project and the software is developed and you're thinking, all right, the software is done. My developer is telling me it'll be done by a certain time and then I should be able to ship it. I should be able to launch this product and be good to go. And then you realize that the first iteration, version 1, is really buggy and you actually need to go through a lot more testing, maybe testing yourself. Maybe you need to hire testers to do it versus selling it immediately, because then your beta users are going to have like a horrible product that's super buggy, which is why basically when people were like, hey, I have some software, I want you to test it, or I'll give you free access to check it out. I'm like, no, I'm not going to test your fucking software for you. Like, do it yourself. I usually don't want to touch anything unless it's like version 3 or something, especially with the half-baked ideas that people are like, all right, I got this thing put together. I know they didn't fucking test it. They're like barely going through the success use cases and then you find bugs in there. So I learned my lesson early on that there's a lot of real amateurs out there that don't know what they're doing, and I'm not going to waste my time like trying to learn software. And then they didn't even test it themselves. So the point is, if you go through this process, then you realize, oh, I need to set aside as much time as it took to develop the product. I need to set aside that much time to do the testing. Just making up an example, but like I said, everyone underestimates things. So you have to test the software, but you also have to get it fixed too. So you have to make sure you include that. All that to say, as you launch a product, you can go through, usually you want to do this like right after you launch the product so that you, you know, or sorry, you finish the project. That way you remember the things that went wrong and the things that went well. And of course, like, hopefully there's a lot of stuff that went well and you'll be able to keep on doing that sort of thing. So, last one we're going to hit here is the risk management. So there was, I'm trying to remember, it was probably relatively early on in my project management career. That was one of the big things. I was like a risk manager for like a few big projects. And essentially it would be the leads of the project. And we would talk about the issues that we thought might come up or issues that already did come up. And that's more issue management, but the risk management is identifying the problems, thinking about like what might happen if that problem does occur, and then what to do to either prevent them from happening or minimizing the impact, and calculating or at least thinking about the probability, which often is just a guess, like what's the likelihood that this team is going to run behind schedule and then impact the rest of the schedule. Often that could be a small chance, but if we find out, that company has laid off a couple of their employees or someone quit, so the team's smaller, the probability goes up, and then you need to figure out what to do. So it's a lot of like thinking ahead and thinking, all right, what might go wrong? And that's a thing, especially like solo entrepreneurs, you are not thinking about like all the things that could go wrong. Some people might be, but a lot of times like you have to just focus hard on that success criteria and like the things that are going to happen for all this to work out. You're not fixating on the things that could go wrong, but you should be aware. And the big thing, and I'll make up a real kind of example that it's something I was always thinking about so that it didn't happen. Taxes, right? So even if you're doing really well in your business, you have good cash flow, your expenses are somewhat in check. If you are not saving money to be able to pay your tax bill, then you could go out of business. So that's a big risk. Basically, like if the tax bill comes due and you have spent all the money or reinvested all of your revenue back into the company and you don't have like liquid cash that you could pay your taxes, then you could go out of business. And this is something you hear where it's like a company was like making a lot of revenue, but they were inexperienced and they didn't have the insight that they should hire an accountant or a bookkeeper to help them manage their books. And they just had so much money coming in that they accidentally spent too much and didn't account for the fact that they would have to pay taxes. So just a made up example, but there are so many different risks that can pop up. And depending on like how critical the project is, if it's just a vacation or whatever, do you really need to do like a full risk management situation on the weather? Well, probably not, but you still end up thinking about it, right? So if you're like, well, we're going to Yellowstone National Park and it's in the fall, so it might be fairly warm, but it also could be very cold and it could snow. So is that going to impact the activities that you were going to do? What about different excursions or side trips or activities that you think you're going to do? How do you need to account for it in the, in the chance that there's weather that keeps you from doing whatever it is? Or maybe you're setting up like a snowmobile trip or whatever, and what if it doesn't snow? What if there's not enough snow out there? So it's just stuff that you have to think about and have plans. So maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe if it doesn't snow, then you don't have to pay and it doesn't matter and you can find some other activity to do. But sometimes you need to think about it, and you need to bring an extra jacket or a hat or something like that. Make sure you have mittens. It's really cold, right? All right. So I think that's it for today. And if you have any questions or thoughts on this episode, or if you want to hear more about project management and different skills, there's a couple other things I'm sure I could get into, specific examples, that sort of thing. All right, that's all for today. Everybody have a good one, and we'll catch you next week.